ways to train a dog, and people have been trying to do it certainly for longer than any of us have been around. Last week, we focused on clicker training as a method, and this week, we're going to be talking to Fred Hassan, who runs an organization called Sit Means Sit, and he has a very particular method of training dogs, which is extremely successful. We've heard from a number of people who have gone to his seminars and workshops and have said this is the answer. So, Fred, first of all, welcome to the Good Dog Podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. And tell me a little bit about how dog training works in general. What are some of the methods that are used to get dogs to do essentially what we want them to do?
Well, I think, Joanne, that there are a variety of methods to be used in dog training, and each of them has their own place. And the great thing about dog training, like everything else in life, is that people have choices, and they want to make decisions about certain things of dog training, what might work better for their dog. Or sometimes a system might work very well for their dog, but they might have to go outside of that particular system just to get a result for a particular problem or a particular thing that they want done. So it's good to see a little bit of everything and to have just a lot of the trainers and your training just a results-oriented thing. What can we do to make the results for this particular dog as good as it can be? And I think that's all of our goals.
Is it true that some dogs will respond better to certain methods and others to other methods?
I think that that's very true, but it also depends on who the person behind the method is, because we see various people using, you know, within the same method, that some people get better results than others. Now, that's not a reflection on the method. In other words, if you took six different clicker trainers or six different people that are Keeler trainers or leash trainers or any sort of trainers and get six different results, and the reason for that is it's human perception. We all have different human perceptions. In other words, those of you that are, you know, have a husband and wife, a husband's perception of what is clean might be different than what a wife's perception is of clean, even though the husband will swear to you, hey, this is clean. So it's the same with dog training. So I think it's still, we want to put responsibility on the individual trainer and give the people the choices to get out there and feel what they think is best for their particular dog. I think that's really important.
Do most of these methods of training dogs involve some sort of reward system?
Yes. I mean, they do to some degree, because it really varies on the individual dog. In other words, a lot of dogs may work for food, and it might be very, very effective with a food-driven dog. But when you've been around a lot of dogs, there's a lot of dogs that might not care that much about food, or that some other outside environmental thing is stronger than the food, or maybe the food can also be a distraction for the dog. An example would be if you start food training your dog, and now you're trying to get him to be away from you or go out away from you, you might have a little bit of problem if all of the food and all the rewarding has been next to you. So it just depends on what you're trying to accomplish and what the individual is trying to accomplish. There's a lot of different ways you can train a dog. There's a lot of different successful ways. Nobody's going to dispute that dog training's been around for a lot of years, and people have had success in dog training in a variety of methods. So finding what's best for you and the trainer that's best for you is very important.
So in Sit Means Sit, your company, Fred, you utilize remote collars. Tell me a little bit about a remote collar.
Well, a remote collar is a device that the dog wears that the handler or the trainer has a remote in their hand, and they're able to get to the dog through variable intensity. And what I mean by variable intensity is if I could put this into a leash format with you, when you take a leash into somebody's hand, the individual has, it's their perception of how hard or soft they want to tug on that leash. Well, you have the same thing here. It's an individual's perception, and they have a dial, and they're able to get to the dog in various parts. Now, the one thing that's quite a bit different with remote training than is with traditional training is we actually, if you do it, when we do demonstrations sometimes by putting a leash or whatever around a dog's or a person's neck or anybody's neck, you can tug as lightly as you want with that leash, but the person would still be able to physically feel it. But with the collar, we can actually go so low that you can't feel it. So all my only point there is that it is adjustable. Now, people feel things a lot different than dogs do. And anybody that's not familiar with dogs and people feeling things, so it's not an apples-to-apples type of situation, is there's a couple of very simple analogies that I can give you. Number one, anybody that's lived in a colder climate, like maybe Minnesota, for example, has experienced seeing a Labrador Retriever, for example, in the middle of the wintertime jump naked into the water, and it doesn't bother them at all. Obviously, as a human being, if you jump naked in the water in the middle of the winter in Minnesota, it would bother you quite a bit. Another example like that would be somebody in Minnesota, when it's snowing outside, you can let your dog outside and watch your dog run barefoot in the snow for hours on end, and it doesn't really bother them. As a human, it would be different. So a lot of things are different with a dog than they are with a person, and that's where the adjustability, whether it be a leash or whether it be a clicker or whether it be a remote collar, comes in.
Why is a remote collar more effective, in your estimation, than clicker training?
Well, I think that I just think it's just limitations. I mean, I think it would be like asking the question of why would a cell phone be more effective than a phone on your wall? Just because you would be able to do things, whatever you can do at 6 feet, you would be limited to with a phone on your wall. You would also be able to do at other distances with a cell phone, and that's why. Basically, when you take events like AKC field trials for hunting dogs, for example, that's a very good example. It's been around for a lot of years. All of those people use remote collars, and that's just basically because the dogs are working at a distance from them, maybe 100, 200, 300, 400 yards away, and they're just able to do things with the dog and teach him and talk to him in ways that it just wouldn't be efficient with a with any other type of training method. Now, there really is no difference between a dog being 300 yards away from you and from him being 10 feet away from you if your leash only goes 6 feet. So, and we all have the same problem. You know, sometimes your dog, in a field trial, the dog might be running after a bird going 100 miles an hour, and he's supposed to stop and doesn't want to, but yet in your house, he might be chasing after the mailman, and he doesn't want to stop because he wants to get to the mailman. So in either way, it just gives you the capabilities of doing things that you couldn't. Now, you have to remember something. The other thing that's important here is all of these training philosophies and methodologies that are proven to be successful, we are not taking any of those away from the remote collar trainer. We have remote collar trainers that use food and that use leashes, and it's all an individual thing, but we also have added to the pot. So we have everything that a traditional trainer has, plus more.
So generally speaking, our house dogs or our home pets should be on leashes when they're not in the home, right?
Yeah, it depends on the individual area, you know, and again, we have people all over the country. Some people live in rural environments, and they let their dogs run. Some places have stricter leash laws than others, where your dog can't be on a leash. But, you know, an old dog trainer, Joanne, once said, never give a command that you can't enforce. It's the fairest way to train a dog. And obviously, if the dog's out away from you or past 6 feet, it's pretty hard to do that without having a way to be able to tap him or get to him.
So what the remote collar does is it gives you a way of getting your dog's attention.
Exactly. It's an attention-getting device. That's what we use it as. But again, you know, it's a perception thing. Some people... might want to get a remote collar. For example, they have a problem with their dog coming back to them. So they might want to buy a remote collar and learn how to use it to just get the dog to come back to them. Well, in that instance, it's it can be much more effective than a traditional way, because you don't have to go after the dog or do a lot of things that you wouldn't have to do traditionally. But that is the only thing that the dog would be able to do in that context. In other words, if you wanted to buy a computer and you only wanted to check your email, you could do that and buy a computer for that, but that doesn't mean that that's all the computer can do. That's just all your training is. So, and I think over time, a lot of them have just been used as, you know, to stop a dog from barking, or electric fences have been around for a long time where they're just high levels to stop the dog. Much more expensive, and it's not versatile. You can't pick it up and take it out, and they're usually set a little bit higher. So technology's taken us a long way, you know, just like this radio show. We didn't have podcasts years ago, and look what we can do now. So technology's just taken us. It's really amazing how far this industry has come over the years.
Fred, what does it feel like to a dog to get the zap or the shock or whatever it's called that they get on this remote collar when you press the remote?
Well, and again, Joanne, it's a good question, but it varies with everybody, and that's why with every seminar that we do, we have individuals feel it at different levels, because it's really kind of funny as you go around the room, because what one person might feel, another person won't, and it's the same with the dog, just like the analogy I gave you of the dog being barefoot in the snow. If that doesn't really bother them, you know, I mean, a training system is simple. Nobody's going to be successful at training if their dog's running around screaming and their tail's between their legs. That's just common sense, especially when you're doing everything in public as we are. So I think that's just a common sense issue. I mean, you can't limit everything. You can't stop people from stringing their dogs up or beating them or hitting them or hitting them with a baseball bat or putting a collar on the highest level that it can possibly go. But I think that that's just, by and large, I think most human beings love their dogs, and they want to see the best their dog, and I think that that's what we found. We just, in all the years of doing this, you know, some people have said to us, boy, don't you have a problem with some of these people abusing it? And we just haven't run into that problem at all. I think most people just that are calling for training just really want to help their dog and want to have their dog the best it can be.
Sure. Now, generally speaking, I have to assume that it's better to train a dog as a puppy, right?
I mean, ideally it would, but again, you know, you're talking about a thing where we get a lot of calls, we don't turn anything away, and sometimes that's out of our control. You know, we like to get results, and we like to get results as quickly as we can so the dog can be happy and be able to live its life. Sometimes we get people that get a dog out of the shelter, or maybe a friend gave it to them, or maybe with a police department, the dog came from another country. They don't know what language he speaks. There's a lot of things there, and we don't want to be in a situation where we come over there and we say, oh, well, sorry, you didn't bring this dog as a puppy, so you're going to have to take him back. Well, we always tell the people, because when they come over there, they're usually filled with excuses. The dog doesn't come to me because when he was a baby, this happened, or the other trainer did this, or this happened, or that happened. We're not really concerned with that. What we're concerned with is that things need to change now for the owner, and the dog needs to have a better life now, but the people are educated enough that they need to see that before they make a decision. So when we train the people, we always tell them, we're in the same boat as you are. If the dog isn't listening because maybe he was abused as a puppy or the other person didn't do any training, when I take the dog, I've got the same problem that you had, but here you can see that a difference is made quickly, and now the dog and you can go on with their life.
Generally speaking, does it require that one-on-one training, or do you have a methodology that people can learn on their own and employ some of these methods by seeing your videotapes or by reading everything on your website?
Well, you know, it's kind of a difficult question to answer, because some people can look at it. I was self-taught, so I just kind of saw these things, and just right away it hit me that you can get to the dog, and it's adjustable, and I learned everything on my own. But the problem with today is that we want to look for successful training, and if you go to a trainer and you're having a problem as a potential client, and there's not a successful remote collar trainer in your area, then you have a problem with problem solving and getting help. If your computer goes down, you have somewhere you can go. If maybe you don't know how to fix a computer because you haven't had one for very long, but you can pick up the phone book and you can find somebody that that can fix a computer for you. This is a little bit different because there's not a lot of people out there that have been having success with remote caller training. And if you're calling a trainer and they're knocking it, you know, right away, it's just a red flag that, well, they're not having success at it. But you're looking for successful. When you're looking to find something, you want to find success. There's trainers that are successful and unsuccessful in clicker training. But if you go to somebody that says clicker training doesn't work or I couldn't do this, that's not a reflection on the clicker trainer. I mean, on clicker training, that's just a fact that maybe you better look somewhere else for somebody that has success at it. So it's, you know, it's just a, it's a, an educational process. And, you know, technology's come a lot way, long way, and I think what's made us so successful is that we're out there showing it, and we're out there doing it in public, and it's kind of hard to, you know, turn your head at the results that we've had.
So if people go to your website, sitmeanssit.com, what will they find?
What they will find is a variety of locations that we have opened at the time of this recording. I think we have 35. We also have one opening in Israel pretty soon and Mexico. And these people come for 3 weeks of extensive training, and they learn how to do this. They learn it hands-on. We actually do not have any classroom in our school. We take the dogs to the shelter, and one of the shelters out here has seen the results that we've had with the dogs and welcomes us over there, and we teach the people with the shelter dogs, and we take them to the houses, and we learn how to problem solve. Everything in life with dog training has a lot to do with problem solving. If everything went perfectly, no matter what the training system would be, then we'd all be doing it successfully. But the reason why people go to dog trainers is because whatever they're doing is not working. And they might have even read a book or seen a video on the same topic, but sometimes people need help, and people learn in a variety of ways. Some people learn easier hands-on. People learn books. But, you know, our system is when we get a call from somebody that we don't have a location, it's very difficult. But we're expanding quickly, and we hope to remedy that problem very soon.
Well, Fred, I want to thank you so much for all this information, and once again, direct people to your site, and they can find out a little more about the program and as well about a location near them. It's sitmeanssit.com. Fred Hassan, thanks so much for being on Good Dog Today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to Good Dog Today. If you've had experience with either clicker training or remote caller training, we'd love to hear from you, and we'll talk about it on a future show. Send an email, if you would, to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.